It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Mayor Phil Goff, how are you?
Morena, Rich. Thank you. The sun is shining and we are at level two and
yes.
There was no tsunami and there are things to celebrate in life.
It's been quite a big week, hasn't it? Let's start with talking about level two. We are very fortunate to be back at level two now. That, of course, means a few extra, you know, things we have to think about, though. We're not back at, you know, normal COVID life at the moment, I guess we could say, particularly when we're out and about in public space. Masking up is probably a big thing. What are some of the key, I guess, messages that the council wants people to remember?
Well, I guess it's all of the normal precautions. It may be level two, but I've got to say on Sunday when I went out and about, it felt very much like level one. People had made that psychological transition. You know, things are better than we thought. We've contained the virus. We can let our guard down a bit, and we can, you know, it's a bit like, you know, you've been cooped up in a room, and suddenly you're let out, and you want to, you know, run around waving your hands in the air and enjoying your freedom. And it's just a reminder to people that we are still at level two, which means, you know, mainly constraints in terms of large gatherings. No gatherings of more than 100, and a bit of social distancing, and the critical things, just if you're feeling unwell, you know, ring Healthline, get a test while you're waiting for the test results, self-isolate. Those things are pretty important. We, you know, had a couple of incidents under the level three where people didn't understand or didn't follow the rules, and it's be important that we do so. You know, while we're celebrating that we're headed back to level one, but we know COVID's just around the corner at any time, and given the opportunity, particularly with the new variants being more contagious, it can take off, and when it takes off, it's hard to control. When you think about it last time, you know, 15 cases, while we did incredibly well to constrain it to that. So, you know, here's a heads up to all of the people that work so hard to make sure that the rest of us were safe.
Absolutely. But yes, we've just got to keep doing what we are getting quite good at doing now. But yeah, we can't get can't get complacent.
It's deja vu,
about it.
Isn't it?
It is a bit. Yeah. Let's talk about something non-COVID related, but it is quite a big conversation that's going on at the moment. This is around the Erebus Memorial that's been proposed for the Sir Dovemeyer Robinson Park, which is a par site as well. And we're seeing some protests and some pushback from this, led by Dame Rangimarie Nida Glavish, who says that the site is culturally significant and is frustrated because it isn't necessarily a site that has a connection with the Erebus Memorial. Now, Ngāti Whātua o Ōrākei, who are the mana whenua of the area, have said that they're okay with this going ahead, but there are more broader concerns within Ngāti Whātua as a broader iwi, and also within Te Ao Māori as well around this site. What has the consultation process been to get to this point?
Well, it's been pretty full, actually, particularly with the consultation done by the Waitemata local board. And let me just acknowledge Ngāti Whātua o Ōrākei. They are the local iwi. They've been okay with this from the beginning. They've been involved in the decision-making from the beginning, and they've been consistent in their support for it. So, you know, generally, and, you know, the marae is not a huge distance away from the site. Ngāti Whātua have been staunch in their support for it. So, you know, if there was a problem with this infringing on a par site or whatever, Ngāti Whātua would have been the first to be outspoken about it. There's talk about the pahutukawa tree, and it is a beautiful pahutukawa tree. That won't be affected. All the arborists say, okay, no, that's not going to have an impact. I look at this largely from the viewpoint of the families of 257 people who died on that flight, our worst ever aviation disaster. And they've waited 40 years for a memorial. And I think it's time that we honoured those people and the people that we commemorate with a memorial. There was an extensive process to try. No site's perfect. But this was the site that was chosen. This was the site.
Why was this the site that was selected? Because I guess one of these concerns that's coming up is this seems like perhaps, you know, there is no obvious link to the Erebus disaster. Why has this been particularly chosen as a site?
Well, it's an Auckland site, and the flight that crashed on Erebus left from Auckland. So Auckland was the place where the families wanted the memorial to be. They didn't want it to be in a cemetery or somewhere, you know, that was dark and gloomy. They wanted it as a kind of a sense of looking to, you know, when you look at the memorial that's designed there, it's a path leading up into the sky and it looks out over the ocean. And that was the site that the families thought, you know, and it was hard getting agreement amongst all of those families, but that was the site that the families thought was appropriate. You know, some of the local people say, well, look, this is our park. We don't want it here. I saw some comments that I thought weren't particularly tasteful about, well, we couldn't drink our wine in the park with that memorial to people dying there and feel comfortable. And then comments that, oh, maybe it's a threat to people's safety because, you know, people could be attacked on it. I didn't think that the criticisms held water, nor did the local MP, David Seymour, who was quite forthright, and I acknowledge his forthrightness in saying, actually, most people in the area don't feel bad about this. There are some people that do feel bad about it, and they've been very vocal, but we've got to look at the wider picture. The Prime Minister, the Ministry of Culture and Heritage, the Waitemata local board by a majority, and myself, we all feel that it's time to put a memorial there, and we can keep prevaricating till the point that there's nobody left that was a close family to those that were killed. I think that would be a disgrace. I think it's time. We've been through the consultation. We've made the decisions. Now it's time to get on and do it. And I'm sorry, these things don't please everybody, and people have got the right to protest. They've got the right to have a different point of view. But in the end, you follow proper process, and when you follow proper process, you then implement the decision, and you don't allow one group of people to exercise the veto over what a larger group of people are actually in favour of. So I'm firmly in support of the memorial, and I think it's just, let's get on and do it now. And I don't think that the reasons that have been put up in opposition to the memorial are profound and hold water.
Let's talk a little bit about, speaking of water, the tsunami alert that we had on Friday, which was, you know, I think for a lot of people, quite a scary experience. We were in Auckland in a less precarious position than those up north, but I'm sure a lot of people probably felt their adrenaline shoot up when the emergency alert came through on the phone. Now, do you feel like the comms around what we saw on Friday were communicated effectively enough? There has been some criticism that perhaps the difference between needing to evacuate and also just being on alert for what we were, you know, keeping an eye on the shores and the water as well. Do you think there was enough knowledge out there for what those differences were, particularly for people in a place like Auckland, where we weren't necessarily in the worst space, but we are surrounded by water, we're on a very small isthmus? Do you think there was enough information for people?
Yeah, look, you always look at how you can do things better, but I think by and large the message was communicated pretty clearly, and the message was for Auckland, you don't need to evacuate. You should keep away from the ocean and the foreshore, and if you're in Aotea, Great Barrier, I'm getting my islands mixed up here, then the message was very clearly you needed to move to higher ground. And I rang the chair of the Great Barrier Local Board, Izzy Fordham, and she was on a hill somewhere with all of the other people on Great Barrier, and she said that went quite smoothly. Look, you never know for certain, and you probably always need to err a little bit on the side of caution, and you know, 8.1 is a very, very big earthquake, and there were a couple of them up in the Kermadec. I mean, I was woken, I think, sometime after 4 by the alert regarding the one off the East Coast, and I made the big mistake of tweeting after that was found not to be a threat. Thank God, you know, we've got that behind us. No tsunami, isn't that wonderful? And about half an hour after I made that tweet, we got the ones off the Kermadec.
Mm.
And look, I'm in a kind of an interesting position of having, in 2004 on the Boxing Day tsunami, visited a lot of the areas that were affected by that in Thailand, in the Maldives and other places as foreign minister. And I saw the awesome, or actually appalling is probably a better word, effect of what water can do,
mm-hmm.
When you have a tsunami. And I went to a temple, I think, where there were 2,000 bodies that had been in the water probably for upwards of 7 or 8 days. And that is indelibly, fixed in my mind, the horror of what a tsunami can do. So do you have to be precautionary? Absolutely, yes. We might be inconvenienced if we evacuate to higher ground and then find out that it didn't happen. But when that occurs, you should celebrate the fact that it didn't happen.
Absolutely, yeah.
The worst thing would be if it happened and you didn't take that precaution. Then, you know, I equally saw the effects of the tsunami in Samoa,
mm-hmm.
Probably about a decade ago. And it was as if something had wiped out, several hundred metres of land around the coastline, just like a bulldozer had gone over it, and people's lives were lost. So, by and large, I think they did a good job, but in some ways it was a trial run, and they mm-hmm. should use that trial run to say, okay, what can we improve and how can we improve it?
Do you think for Auckland, particularly mainland Auckland, do you think we have enough, I guess, just cultural understanding of what to do if there is a situation like this that arises again? Because, you know, other parts of the country, Wellington, Christchurch, very adept at, you know, earthquake drills, for example. Is this something we maybe need to talk about a bit more in Tamaki Makaurau at a more sort of civics level, maybe in schools as well? Do you think we need to be having these conversations a bit more so it's less of an unknown factor when something like this does happen?
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable point. In an area like Orewa, which is particularly prone to tsunamis, probably there's a higher level of awareness in that area. But if you look at the map set out on the Auckland Hazard Viewer, the Auckland Emergency Management's website, and you see the area they've got it marked in red, orange and yellow, and red is the red shore exclusion zone, there's a hell of a lot of areas around Auckland that would be affected by it, you know, including Devonport up the east coast and the different bays we've got up there, Mairangi Bay, Murray's Bay, etc., mm-hmm. Orewa, and right around. And probably I think we need to, just to make it a bit clearer to people, you saw what happened in Whangarei and on the east coast, and you know, if everybody hops in their car and tries to drive out to a higher piece of land, you get gridlock. And it depends where the earthquake starts. If it starts on the other side of the Pacific, you know, if it's off Chile, you've probably got about 9 hours. But if it starts at the Kermadec, maybe you've got an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah.
And that's not much time to get the message across. So we've got the sirens and various things in the most prone areas. But I think it would be worthwhile doing a little bit more work just to highlight the fact, and including in the media, just even printing this map to say, look, if you live in this area, this is, you know, in the event of a tsunami that is more than, you know, simply, you know, centimetres high, but one that's metres high, these are the areas where you would need to evacuate and you need to know where you might go to.
Mm-hmm.
So I think your point's a fair one, Rachel. I think collectively we could do more to highlight that message.
Well, thank you very much for your time this morning, Phil Goff. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. We'll talk to you again next Tuesday.
Thanks very much, Rachel. You have a great week.
You too. Ka kite.
Ka kite.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Thank you.